And welcome back. Power Hour, it's 12:06 p.m. That's 6 minutes after the hour of noon. How many different ways can a broadcaster actually say that? Monday, November 22nd, 2021, for those of you listening to the sound of my voice, Dave Krieger with you. And we appreciate your joining us because this is Thanksgiving week. I know you're probably all out shopping and have noticed how much more you're paying for your food. But you know, there's some more practical elements of this week that I think need to be paid attention to if it's anything that we could say on this program to be more settling. It would be to look at the historical perspective of what all this stands for. And so, you know, the other side of the equation would say that, yeah, we stole the Indians' land, we ran them off, and we murdered them all, and we just, you know, we put them on reservations. Wow. You know, that's not the narrative that we're talking about here. It's a totally different narrative. And we have Bill Federer on the line with us from AmericanMinute.com. For those of you who want to venture over to the website while we're talking, open up a new window and take a look at it. He has an American Minute on the first national days of Thanksgiving, and we thought it'd be really good this week to bring Bill on to talk about the history of Thanksgiving. He's an author of over 20 books and speaking in over 100 cities a year. He's a best-selling author, nationally known speaker. His book, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, has sold over 500,000 copies. He has a daily radio feature called American Minute and a popular TV show, Faith in History, which is broadcast nationally. He's been featured on just about every single network that you can imagine, including 700 Club, Focus on the Family, Janet Parshall's America, USA Radio Network, NPR, World Net Daily. So you can tell that Bill's fairly plugged in the conservative networks for sure. And we welcome Bill to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
So let's look at the historical perspective. We were talking before the break about, you know, Thanksgiving and what it really means and the historical aspects of this that, you know, people seem to be forgetting. And I'll let you kind of take off with that narrative and tell us what you're promulgating on the American Minute as well as in other venues.
Sure. So I wrote a book called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. It gives sort of the big global picture of why the pilgrims came over. So you had the Muslims conquer Constantinople in 1453, cutting off the land routes to Indian China, and that's why Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. And Spain claimed all the New World as its own. But pre-Columbus, you had the Caribs. These were natives from Colombia and South America. They were coming up and depopulating entire islands. You know, they would cannibalize them. And Columbus's first voyage met the peaceful Indians, but the second voyage he met these Caribs. Saw human bones cooking in pots and gnawed bones, and so it wasn't a perfect paradise before Columbus came over. For the Arawaks, the peaceful ones, they would have been completely annihilated. Then you had Cortez, right? He conquered the Aztecs, and gee, prior to Cortez, you had the Aztecs capturing neighboring tribes and bringing their young people to the top of their pyramids and ripping out their beating hearts and offering it to the sun god and then letting their bodies roll down, and they were cannibalized. This is pre-Columbus. Matter of fact, 5 years ago, they were doing construction on an old building in downtown Mexico City, and under the foundation, they found towers of skulls, amphitheaters of skulls, thousands of them, and women and children skulls as well. So these were not captured in battle. These are ritual sacrifices to this. So pre-Columbus, it was not this ideal society for those tribes that were being captured. And then you had like the Cheyenne. They got a hold of the horse before the other Plains Indians did, and they just mercilessly butchered all these other Plains Indian tribes before the Europeans ever got west. And so it's important to understand that the narrative that this was all perfect before the Europeans came over is not true. The second is that the natives in America, because of the abundance of game, they never really transitioned to an agricultural society. And John Diamond wrote in his book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, tracing the beginnings of civilization and so forth, that when people groups transitioned from hunter-gatherers to agriculture, that's when they learned how to make tools, they learned how to do accounting, they depleted the soil, so then they had to become expansionistic, and then they ended up getting in warfare, and it sort of put them on the edge up of the countries that still were hunter-gatherers. So at the time of the Pilgrims, you had thousands of years of Chinese, and they had navies. There was a treasure fleet in the 1400s that had sailed up and down the coast of America. And they could have colonized America. Unfortunately, the emperor's palace, his name was Zhao, Z-H-O-U, his palace was struck by lightning. And the Chinese emperors ruled by claiming they had a mandate from heaven. And when heaven struck his palace, the next emperor said, whatever he did, we're going to do the opposite. And so it threw China into centuries of isolationism. So, but had his palace not been struck by lightning, when these treasure fleets returned, maybe they would have colonized America. But then you had Muslim sultans, and they raided and had pirates on the Mediterranean in 1625. The Muslim pirates captured over 1,000 from England. They captured an entire Irish village, the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland. These pirates were just rounding them up and taking them away. What if they had, there was actually a sultan that wanted to settle America, but the Ottoman Empire was then invading into Hungary and was tied up in all kinds of wars. And so they said, no, but what if they would have founded America? Do you think they would have treated the Indians any different? Russia, they had a navy, right? They had czars. And so basically, the natives of America, for no fault of their own, because of the plenteousness of the wild game, they were still essentially in the Stone Age. I mean, they had not invented smelting of iron and steel. They had not yet invented a wheel, and they had no written language to do communications. And so so basically anybody could have, it's sort of like Hawaii, right? Every other major country had huge navies with ships. They were still in canoes. It's like, okay, somebody's going to take control of these islands. So you criticize the Europeans for coming to America, but really somebody was going to take claim. And anyway, so there is the 1619 Project, which tries to say, well, slavery started in America. It's like, no, wherever you have kings on top, you have slaves on the bottom. So Hammurabi's Code, 1800 BC, talks about slaves. Of course, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, and it was considered nice to not kill them. And so the slavery was like the second best choice. And so, but in China, they had 5,000 years of emperors, and they had slaves on the bottom. Indian Maharajas were considered a semi-divine class of rulers, and they had slaves on the bottom. And then you read the Ashanti tribes in Africa, and they would not only enslave, they would have ritual killings of thousands of people. The idea that it started with people in America is not true. There's a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you intentionally separate a people from their past to get them into a neutral where they don't remember where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into the communist future you have planned for them. And it's a sales technique. So if I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is I tell you negative things about the toothpaste you're currently brushing with. Haven't you read the article? That'll eat the enamel off your teeth. You're using that old stuff. So you're repulsed by it. Now you're questioning, you're open-minded, what are all the toothpastes that are out there? Then I can come along and give you my pitch for this brand new tartar controlled breath freshener stuff. And so that's what they do. They go into the classrooms and tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers. They took land from India and sold people into slavery. They were chauvinists. They were bad. And these kids are like, ooh, and they're repulsed by them. Now you got the kids in a neutral. They're open-minded. Where are all the belief systems out there? Then you give them your pitch for socialism or LGBT or Sharia Islam. Europe went through this. Europe went from 1,000 years of Catholic cathedrals, Protestant Reformation, and Jewish neighborhoods to a secular Europe with the French Revolution, and it was free sex, anything goes, and now it's turning into a Sharia Islamic socialist Europe. And you see that China did the same thing. One interesting story is 3rd century B.C. is the Warring States period, half-dozen kingdoms fighting. One wins, led by Qin Shi Huangdi, And Qinzhi Wangdi was being criticized for doing things differently than they had been done for centuries before. He got tired of being criticized, so he decided to destroy all records of how things were done before. And he burned tens of thousands of bamboo annal books. And so Mao Zedong in the 1960s copied this. And he decided to destroy thousands of years of Chinese culture and got rid of the oldest Buddhist temple in China, destroyed the great gates of Beijing. And so all he had left was this mass of uneducated young people that he could easily brainwash into the People's Republic of China. Pol Pot did the same thing in Cambodia with his communist Khmer Rouge. He made 1975 the new year zero and said anything prior to that was irrelevant. And he killed anybody that wore glasses. He said if you wore glasses, you could read. If you read, you knew the history, and you want to get rid of history. So this concept is more or less the subject of George Orwell's book, 1984. And so in this book is a character named Winston, and his job is to work for the government in the Department of Truth, but all he does is he changes history. And he says, even if I did the history myself, the change to it, I couldn't prove it to anybody. And so I'm the only one that did the change, so it's in my mind, but I don't even know if anybody shares my thoughts. And once the erasure was done, it was forgotten, and the truth was no longer there, and the lie became truth. And so it's
amazing.
He ends with this profound comment, whoever controls the past controls the future, but whoever controls the present controls the past.
Amazing how that works and how it works in cycles. And it's no wonder that critical race theory is kind of like what you're talking about, Bill, and how it's being plugged in to destroy America's youth.
Yeah, as far as the pilgrims go, the European model was whatever the king believed, the kingdom had to believe. And if you didn't, you were a criminal. And could you imagine the government wanting to dictate to you your conscience and tell you what you should and shouldn't believe and what you should and shouldn't do with your body? And so in England, the king was Henry VIII, and he insisted that everybody be Anglican. And there was a group that wanted to purify the Anglican church. They were called Puritans. And there was another group that said, it's beyond hope of purifying. We're going to separate ourselves. We're going to believe in freedom of conscience. We don't want the government telling us how to believe. And they would meet in secret barns and basements by candlelight. They would get persecuted, arrested. They fled to Holland. And after 12 years, they fled to America. We call them pilgrims. Right? And they were going to land in a Jamestown, started 14 years earlier. It was a king-run colony. And they figured, well, we'll be 3,000 miles away. He won't notice us. But instead, they got in a storm, and they were blown off course, and they landed in Massachusetts. They tried sailing south, but off the coast of Cape Cod, it's a graveyard of ships. There's like 3,000 ships have sunk because the sand goes way out, shallow shoals, they call them. So the captain of the Mayflower takes them back to Plymouth Rock and says, everyone off the boat. And the pilgrims say, we have a question. Who's going to be in charge of us? The whole world is ruled by kings and sultans and pharaohs and Caesars and Kaisers. I mean, it's all top down. And you're telling us to get off. Who's going to be in charge? They do something unique. They give themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact. We, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together into a civil body politic. Simple, revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by kings, it's bottom-up rule by we. In the womb of this little Mayflower is the conception of this child of self-government, of independence, of individual freedom of conscience. And so where did they get their idea? From their pastor, John Robinson. He was not a king-appointed Anglican pastor. He was one of these congregationalist pastors, and it's his church model where the pastor wants to help you to have a relationship with God and then coach you how to become spiritually mature, and then hopefully you go out and get involved in the ministry and replicate. And so everybody's supposed to be involved. They simply took their church model of government, and they made it their community model of government, and they called them town hall meetings. They actually called their church a meeting house. The word synagogue in Hebrew means meeting house. And that's where they were taught the law, but that's also where they elected their elders, their city elders. And so when the revolution started, the British sent over a military governor of Massachusetts, and he outlawed town hall meetings. He says, democracy is too prevalent in America. We don't need people meeting and making resolutions. You just do what the government tells you to do. And so you begin to see that America, if you were to sum up one word, it would be individual. individual rights, individual worth. If you have a worth and an identity simply because you're made in the image of God, not because you belong to a particular party, not because you belong to a particular religion, not because you are a male or a female, you're made in the image of God, right? So it's this biblical concept. And this God of the Bible says there's no respect of persons in judgment. Rich or poor, everyone's treated the same. The King of England didn't believe everyone was created the same. He believed he was created a little extra special called the divine right of kings. But in America, we didn't have a king, and we believe this biblical idea that everyone's equal.
I remember when Peter actually used that vernacular to the church when he was speaking to the church on the day of Pentecost, saying that God is no respecter of persons. So it's amazing that you would bring that up from way back when, from the times of Christ, and now we bring that into fruition here. Folks, it's very good spiritual points made here by Bill. Bill Federer is with us on the show. If you want to call up 844-769-2944 and interject anything or have any questions, historical questions, you want something clarified or put into a little bit better perspective for you to make your Thanksgiving holiday just a little bit brighter, so you know that we aren't the bad guys here. We came over here, and so we pick up the story from We the People. We had this organized constitutional government that came from it. But in the meantime, we had to learn to get along with the Indians, did we not, Bill?
Yeah, so the Pilgrims had a 50-year peace with the Pilgrims. Squanto is a fascinating story. He is the Pilgrims were religiously motivated, but others weren't. So Spain had a monopoly on the New World, and they got gold and silver that they would ship back to Cuba, then to Spain. And you had French, Dutch, English pirates, Sir Francis Drake, robbing these Spanish ships. And so some of these pirates were not really scrupulous, and they'd sail up and down the coast of America and lure unsuspecting natives on board, lock them below deck, take them to Spain, sell them into slavery. And this is what happened to one Indian named Squanto. And the story is that when he gets over to Spain, the monks find out about these Native Americans being sold, and they make such a ruckus about it that they're not sold. They're committed into the custody of these monks who take care of them for a while and then eventually give Squanto his freedom. And Squanto hitchhikes his way across Europe and gets to England, works in London for years, learns the language, learns a skill, finds some shipping company trade business that has a branch in Newfoundland. And so they drop him off, and then he finds another company fishing. He'll be their interpreter and guide, and they drop him off in Massachusetts, only to find his entire tribe was dead. William Bradford writes that a couple years before the Pilgrims, a French ship was shipwrecked at Cape Cod. The sailors got ashore. The Indians never left watching them and dogging them till they got the advantage. And then they killed them all, but three or four of whom they sent from one sachem to another, making sport with them. Anyway, one of them must have had illness. The Indians caught it and wiped out the whole tribe. So as bad as Squanto's kidnapping was, had he not been kidnapped, he most certainly would have died in the plague. And so he's living with another tribe, the Pilgrims land. Half the Pilgrims died that first winter. They never would have survived. But Squanto, that next spring, walks out of the woods, and you can imagine him in his loincloth saying, "Oh, you guys from England? Yeah, I used to live there. Yeah, the St. Paul's Chapel and the Wharf Diamond, you know, the pub here. Oh, and this place, I grew up here." He knew that place like the back of his hand. Over the hills of spring, he taught them how to go down to the river, squeegee in the mud, and catch eels and clams, and taught them how to fish. They said, "We tried that." He goes, "No, these are salmon. They spawn. This river will be packed." Taught them how to plant corn, where you put a piece of fish over it, and then you keep the wolves away for 2 weeks, and the fish decomposes, and you have fertilized soil, a nice stalk of corn. Taught them how to take the corn, put it in a pot, shake it over a fire, and make popcorn. Taught them how to catch beavers. And William Bradford says, "Neither was there a man among them who had ever seen a beaver skin until instructed by Squanto. It took 40 years worth of beaver skins for them to pay off their boat ride." We sort of don't ask ourselves, you know, who's paying for this boat ride? Matter of fact, one of the ships in 1625 had 800 pounds of beaver skins that they sent back to England, and a Turkish man of war captures it in the English Channel, takes the ship and the crew to Morocco, and sells them into slavery.
Oh,
and William Bradford said, "Because of the ship taken by the Turks, all trade was dead." So even the Pilgrims had to put up with that. Anyway, Squanto, most importantly, was their interpreter, put him on good terms with the other Indian tribes. And so there's your first Thanksgiving, where the chiefs come and bring their food, and the Indians, their turkeys, and the pilgrims have their puddings. And the first Thanksgiving went on for 3 days. Wow. Later, that Indian chief got sick, and the pilgrim Edward Winslow doctored him up, and he recovered. And so that contributed to a 50-year peace between the pilgrims and the Indians.
Amazing how that works. Bob in St. Louis, you're on the phone with Bill Federer.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Bob. Hello.
Yeah, it's a great show. You talked the way they used to maybe about 30, 40 years ago about the reality. Number one, I was wondering where I can get a transcript of what you're saying here, because I ain't got to play this to my granddaughter and my daughter, because they've both been brainwashed by the school system. But it's great to hear some truth. But I was wondering, when was the incipience of this Marxism that inculcated our public schools? And now it's gone into all the Christian schools, too. It's been very progressive, very calculated. And number one, okay, that's two questions. Where could I get this transcript of what you're doing right now? But where would you say the beginning of all this came about?
I want to answer the first question for Bob. If you go on thepowerhour.com, we archive these shows shortly after they air, and so you'll be able to save that and share that with your family. For the second question, Bill, we've got about a minute left, so go ahead
So all this is in a book. It's called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century, How the Pilgrims Escaped It, and AmericanMinute.com is my website. Another book is called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, and on that website I have a whole set of flash drives with my presentations with PowerPoints and everything. But, the main thing, it happened with, it was Protestants that pushed for public education. And then over time, the God part got removed, and then it became secular. But now the Marxism has come in, and they want to portray all of our past negatively.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with Oil of Oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. When talking of great immune support, a line of products comes to my mind. That's North American Urban Spice. We carry the Resvital Calf, Sinuoraga, Oreganol Juice, Pure Lisi, Chaga Max, Collagen Power Plus, Oregarest, Super Strength Oregano Oil, Black Seed, and many more. Support small businesses when you buy from the good guys. Go to thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita silver lozenges. Of course, then the OregaResp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
This craft that the Strokes family had of recognizing the medicinal value of herbs by taste and then putting formulas together, knowing the herbal ingredients they needed, but putting them together in perfect proportion by taste, just like a chef would, the Strokes Heart Drops, the world-famous Strokes Heart Drops that saved my life, Jim Strokes's and many others, my dad, my list goes on and on. But those heart drops, they were developed, created 40 years ago for Jim himself after a heart attack. Now, this formula fixed my high blood pressure over 20 years ago, and I have had great blood pressure since.
Call Jay at 877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
And once again, welcome back to the Power Hour. It's 12:33 p.m. If you are tuning in today, Monday, November 22nd, 2021, the 57th anniversary of JFK's assassination and death. And we have Bill Federer on the line with us from AmericanMinute.com. He's got lots of books and various historical perspectives. He talks about Marxism, socialism, all that good stuff. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we wanted to have him on the show, is because of the fact he's chronicled the history of Thanksgiving and what was going on, kind of blowing some of these historical narratives by the left out of the water. And Bob from St. Louis, you're still on the line with us, and you asked a question about the Marxist attitudes and when all this stuff started to creep in. And Bill, I'm going to ask you, Bill, to basically re-answer that before we went to the break.
Sure. Originally in the colonies, each denomination founded its own colony and had its own education system in the colony. So Virginia was Anglican, and it eventually had William and Mary. Massachusetts was Puritan, and that's where you had Harvard. Connecticut was Congregationalist, and that's where you had Yale. Rhode Island was founded by Baptists, and that's where you had Brown University. New York was originally founded by Dutch Reformed, and then it became British, and then it had, you know, King's College. But you get the picture. But then you began to have a lot of immigrants coming to America, and the Protestants decided that they would have common schools, and they would just teach what they held in common, King James Bible, the Our Father, Ten Commandments, you know, sort of basic Christianity. And then in 1820, there's an Irish potato famine. Millions of Irish Catholics come to America, and they don't like the Ten Commandments taught in the Protestant order. You think, really? This is a different order? More or less, the Catholics combined the first and split the tenth. But it's the same content when you read through it. And the Protestants would add on the end of the Our Father, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. I mean, things that today are relatively minor, but back then in a little Latin school in Boston, right, that was a feeder school to Harvard, these little immigrant boys wouldn't say the Ten Commandments in the Protestant order. They got taken to the principal's office and spanked. And they went back home, and the priest who had just come over from Europe with all the controversies over there praised these kids. And so the next week, hundreds of these boys would not say the Ten Commandments in the Protestant order. And there were, like, demonstrations in the streets, and then they responded by, like, raiding convents, and they stoned churches, and they burnt Catholic churches. And so there was a big backlash. And so laws were passed during this time to prevent tax money to go to the Catholic schools. And there was a bishop in New York named John Hughes, and he decided, enough, we're going to pull all the Catholic kids out of the public common schools because we don't like the Protestant stuff being taught. And so he started the parochial school system in America. So you had two school systems, the Protestant, which was the public school system, and the Catholic. And that's the way it was. I have a 1945 a public school textbook from Dallas, Texas. And it has a whole course on the Bible, on the preexistence of Christ, on the Trinity, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. This is 1945. But in 1960, you had an atheist named Madeleine Murray O'Hare. And she tries to immigrate to France, to the Soviet Union embassy, and they say, no way. She comes back and puts her son in the Maryland school system. His name is William J. Murray. And he's a friend of mine because he's since become a Christian. But she sues on his behalf. She sees these little kids praying in the classroom. So she brings a lawsuit to stop prayer. And Bill Murray, the son, he says that money flooded in from atheists all around the country. It was like this every time they open the mail, there's money. And so then she decided to bring another lawsuit to get Bible reading out of the schools. And more money is flooding in. And you got these liberal justices on the Supreme Court. And anyway, so the scenario was that the Protestant-Catholic controversy was so great that they said, look, let's just not teach religion in schools. And, you know, gee, at the time of World War II, 98% of the country was either Catholic or Protestant, with maybe 1% Jewish. You know, there's quotes from Franklin Roosevelt. He says, democracy is the birthright of every American, whether they be Protestant, Catholic, or Jew. And so he thought he was being liberal by including Catholics and Protestants in there, right, because he was Episcopalian. And but they said, look, everybody's, you know, majority Christian. Let's just not talk about it in schools. They didn't realize they were creating a vacuum. And into that vacuum would be sucked a lot of leftist ideology that would say, they would belittle the Christian contributions to the founding of the country. And then they would begin to paint those that held Bible views as the problem with the world and try to incorrectly blame them for things like slavery, when it actually it was the Christians in America that helped get rid of slavery. Right? I mean, it was 500,000 people died in the Civil War, and half of them were from the North, and they were white, and they were fighting and giving their lives to free the slaves. Right? You can't say, well, it's a color thing. And then it was the Democrats in the South that started Jim Crow laws and black codes and KKK, right? Lincoln was the first Republican president. He outlawed slavery. He pushed through the 13th Amendment to end slavery by through the Constitution. Next, you had Ulysses S. Grant, Republican president. He starts the Department of Justice to stop the Democrats in the South from doing intimidation to the blacks. And he's a Republican. You had Teddy Roosevelt, the first Republican president, had the first black man in the White House for dinner, is Booker T. Washington. But then the Democrats got back in control. Woodrow Wilson, he showed a KKK film in the White House, and he began to segregate all the federal offices in the military. But then you had another Republican named Eisenhower. And he integrates the military, and he becomes president. He sends the federal troops to help escort these black kids to the schools. And you had Democrat George Wallace standing in front of the school saying, we're not going to integrate. And he was the governor of Alabama. And he was directly referenced by Martin Luther King Jr. in his speech, where he said, you know, I believe one day that the sons of slaves and the sons of slave owners will walk together as friends. But in that speech, he says, and that, you know, governor of Alabama with racism dripping from his lips. And he's talking about this Democrat governor, George Wallace. You know, you see that it's not a black-white issue. It's a Democrat-Republican issue.
All right? Politicized. So yeah. Bob, does that help?
Yeah,
does that help?
It's not a hardware. It's not a hardware problem. It's a software problem.
No doubt. Bob, so, yep. No, I was just Bill. I was just trying to get Bob to chime in and see if that answered his question.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up was John Dewey. What was that? In 1933, we brought a bunch of socialist communists into this country. And make sure they got in the upper echelons of like Harvard, Yale, and all that stuff. Could you talk anything about that, Bill?
Yeah. So
that was a major thing that happened. It was in 1933. What was it? I forget what the name of it was. It's the Club of Democrats. Like I know Marx belonged to the Club of Democrats in Cologne, Germany, but this was 1933. John Dewey.
Right.
Could
so
you talk anything about
Karl
that?
Marx. Right, Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto in 1848, and Europe for the longest period of time was a class structure of the elite ruling class, like the Bill Gates and Bezos and Soros, and they owned everything, and then everybody else was this worker class. And so you began to have people saying, well, we want to get rid of this ruling class. And that thought began to be called socialism and communism, and it began to filter into the schools in America, into the politicians in America, and then in the late 1800s, you'd had different authors, you know, Upton Sinclair and his, you know, book, you know, The Jungle, and you had The Call of the Wild author, and all these different ones, and they thought that they were, you know, standing up for the lower class, not realizing that anytime you have socialism, it's basically saying that there's a ruling class. But Dewey was one of those. There was Horace Mann. There was Antonio Gramsci, who was an Italian socialist, that says that you can't institute socialism until you erase Christianity, because Christianity teaches the concept of the individual, and they don't like that. They want you to identify with class structure. But, yeah, they got into Harvard, Yale, and all these different colleges, they began to push their thoughts. But a big one was Massachusetts. It's where the teachers' colleges were. And once they got a hold of the teachers' colleges, these teachers would graduate and they'd go out and they'd teach this stuff. And now it's totally flipped. They've gone from, you know, ignoring the Christian contributions to creating a country where you have upward mobility and you have worth as an individual. They've erased that. And now they're saying that Christians are the problem with the world. And they're basically wanting to destroy the concept of the individual and get you to identify with groups, and then they want to pit the groups against each other to cause strife, and then in the chaos they want to usurp power and set up their dictatorship.
Okay, there you go, Bob St. Louis. Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Bob. Thanks for your call. We got Chad in North Carolina. Chad, do you have a question or comment for Bill Federer?
Yes, sir. I couldn't have put it better. That's what I would have said, is they're pitting groups against one another, and they're doing although they're getting caught in the act, they're doing a pretty good job of it. I know a lot of young people who buy into a lot of the CRT propaganda, but I don't know whether, Mr. Federer, you're able to reach out to the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. That's part of his platform, was to try to get rid of, you know, CRT, and in fact, he had spoken out against pornography being presented to school kids, and he's been under heavy attack from the left in the government here, and these particular groups, especially like the LGBT group, saying that he was calling them filth when what he was saying was that having pornography presented to kids, it had no place there. You can find his press interview about that on YouTube, where they even left, you know, just horrible messages on his answering machine and so forth, attacking him.
So, Chad, you're basically wanting to know what Bill's suggestion is to help the lieutenant governor out.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, one interesting study that goes along with what you're talking about is a Oxford anthropologist named J.D. Unwin, U-N-W-I-N, 1934. He wrote a book called Sex and Culture. And in it, he studied 86 major civilizations over 5,000 years, and he saw trends. And one of the trends that he saw was sexual promiscuity always precedes the destruction and collapse of a civilization. He talks about the Romans, the Greeks, the Babylonians, and when they worked really hard, they would be patriotic, they would be industrious, and then finally when they achieved success, they wanted to enjoy their prosperity, and they became pleasure-focused, sensual, promiscuous, and so forth, and they ended up getting weakened and conquered by the next rising civilization. And so when the communists want to take over a country, well, what do they want to do? You want to weaken them from the inside. They couldn't defeat us on the two-front battlefield of World War II. We were undefeatable on the military field. So what's the next step? Rot us from inside. And so that's what Antonio Gramsci talked about in his prison notebooks. He was an Italian socialist that died in prison. But he said that you can't defeat America on the battlefield. He says that you have to make the long march through the institutions. And it's basically the seven pillars of society, but it's turned in reverse. And he specifically wants to go in there and infiltrate. One of the quotes that he talked about is that you have to infiltrate the media, the churches, all these different influencers before you can be successful in weakening the country, and then you can set up socialism. He says socialism is precisely the religion that can eradicate Christianity.
Well, I appreciate your call, Chad, this morning. And it's kind of crazy because California High School has just now unveiled a plan, Bill, for an all-gender locker room. This is in Long Beach, California. Unified School District there has approved several revitalization projects, including a new aquatic center and an all-gender locker room. It's going to break ground this summer at Wilson High School in Long Beach, California. And the project comes largely through the Measure E bond program, believe it or not. And so they are opening the doors to LGBTQ, which I thought meant let's get Biden to quit, but that doesn't mean that. Allowing students to use bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with the gender they identify with. I'm really starting to see a real problem with this, given what happened in Virginia with that ninth grader being raped.
Well, you know, and then you contrast this to China. China has recently outlawed effeminate men. They outlawed postings, and they're cracking down on that. And then they release these military videos of these guys, like, breaking bricks with their foreheads. I mean, here we see China is gearing up militarily, aggressively for conquest. And in America, we're raising kids that they don't even know if they're a boy or girl anymore. I mean, they're going to spend half their life just to try to figure out who they are. Whereas you have these other countries that are raising up, jihadis and people that they are serious about military conquest. So we're basically institutionalizing national weakness. And, even Teddy Roosevelt talked about that, you know, single guys don't want to fight that much. But he says once a guy gets married and he has a wife and family to defend, now he has something to go out and fight for. But if there's no right and there's no wrong, if there's no God, if there's no values, why do you want to go out and give your life for anything? You remove the most. Plato talked about that in my book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. Plato talked about that, you know, first a democracy, everybody tolerates each other. Then they tolerate people that are a little bit off. Then they tolerate people that are a lot off, till finally they're tolerating lawlessness. And it turns into chaos and confusion. And, then he talks about how in that confusion, a tyrant king will come along and promise to fix it, but then he usurps power and he becomes a dictator. But he talks about in this phase where the country is getting weakened, it's nobody wants to get out and fight and defend it. And so that's one of the telltale signs is you when you have sexual immorality, you also lose patriotism and you also lose the desire for people to rise up and have a reason to defend their country.
But this is a real scary scenario for Americans, considering after what happened in Kenosha with the Kyle Rittenhouse case and the protesting and the looting of stores and various other things, and the police are basically standing idly by and watching all these protests go down, and it's like everybody wants to scream to defund the police, and technically that's got nothing to do with changing the sexuality of America or as far as our take in it. But the bigger problem is they're literally, besides trying to alter America's history, they're basically leaving the door open for us to be conquered by another country. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yeah, divide and conquer. Jesus says a house divided against itself cannot stand. And you see, the Bible, Psalms 133, it says how good and pleasant it is when brethren dwell together in unity. And then in Proverbs 6, it says six things the Lord hates, and the last is he that soweth discord. So Satan sowed discord in heaven, right? And sowed discord in the garden with Adam blaming Eve, and sowed discord with Cain killing Abel. And one of the stories is the book of Judges. For 400 years, Israel was a republic before King Saul. But they almost lost it. After Gideon defeated the Midianites, there was peace. But Gideon had an illegitimate son named Abimelech. He goes to the town of Shechem, and he does race identity politics. He sows division. He says, is it good that the sons of Gideon reign over you? Remember, I am your flesh and your bone. And the men of Shechem said, we got to vote for him because he's our brother. And then they go to the temple of Baal-berith, the city treasury, and they take money to hire vain and worthless persons, like Antifa, to be violent and to follow this Abimelech guy and kill all the brothers, his half-brothers of the sons of Gideon. And then the men of Shechem make Abimelech king. So Israel's republic would have ended here rather than a century later had it not been somebody threw a millstone over the wall and it killed Abimelech. But this idea, there's peace, and he goes and he sows division. He wants to pit people against each other. Why? Because he wants to usurp power. So Machiavelli talked about this. 500 years ago, Italy was a bunch of city-states, Venice, Genoa, Naples, and they always fought. And Machiavelli thought if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop the infighting. So he writes a book called The Prince, where he advocates the ends justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end because it'll stop the infighting that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. So if a prince conquers a city, they would hate it. But if the prince pays criminals, like Abimelech did, to kill cows and burn barns and smash windows and set fires and throw things with bricks through windows on the street, then the people will panic and cry out for help. And then the prince will come in and get rid of the very criminals he bribed to create the mess. Nobody will know the better for it. And everyone will praise the prince as a hero. So it's good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire and sow division. And then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher. And they'll pay anything for it.
This is like Hegel. This is like Hegelian theorem. We create a situation because we already know what solution we want. So we create a situation and turn around and then have the people scream. We've already got the answer to that, which is what we want, not what they want. But yet they are leaving feeling happy, which is this is what this whole socialism narrative is about, is you're going to own nothing and you'll still be happy. And it's like, I'm not getting this, but I appreciate your enlightening us with this history, because I mean, this is not, I don't feel so bad. And as a Christian, I definitely don't feel so bad. I just see where the light at the end of the tunnel needs to come from, the spiritual reckoning that each of us Americans has to have. And I really appreciate your coming on the show and discussing all of this from a historical perspective, Bill. The website is called AmericanMinute.com. And Bill Federer has a ton of books on there and research materials and things that if you're interested in the historical perspective of things, you got to visit that website, AmericanMinute.com. Bill, once again, thanks so much for being on the Power Hour. We're going to have you back again soon.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the callers calling in.
Yep, you bet. And we thank our callers, too, and happy Thanksgiving to you, sir. All right, so we're back on track here with the idea, and by the way, I've got no time to take any more calls. Ross Story is reporting that on Monday, Axios reported over 17,000 cryptocurrency enthusiasts who unsuccessfully pooled their money to buy a rare and valuable copy of the U.S. Constitution have won a consolation prize, specifically a cumulative $1 million in transaction fees. The Constitution DAO group used Ethereum to build its war chest. Contributors paid gas fees, essentially network transaction costs that observers estimated to run about $50 per transaction. According to Scott Rosenberg, that didn't mean much to big ticket participants, but it took a big bite out of the smaller guys. The median contribution size was a little over $200, according to Constitution DAO site. Participants in the bid collectively spent nearly $1 million on the gas fees, according to one estimate. It's amazing what people will do on the Ethernet. And again, Ethernet would disappear if EMP showed up. We rely on electricity just a little bit too much. And then all of a sudden you see what happens, especially if somebody like Bill Federer was saying decides they want to come in and divide and conquer. They break us up from the inside. And, you know, frankly, I hate to say this, folks, we cannot let this diversity, equity, and inclusion continue to creep in, because if we do, based on the border crossings and what these people who are coming into America, what their true intentions might be, if the idea is to polarize and continue to divide and conquer America by pitting Americans against each other, at one point in time in history, we will be in for a very rude awakening. And you should know right now, the all-time high number of crossings at the southern border has surpassed anything else that we have seen in the history of America. What can I say? It's been an interesting start to this week, Thanksgiving week. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour, and it's been fun. Thanks to our callers for enlightening us and bringing up some very good topical matter. We appreciate that. And as always, you can check us out on thepowerhour.com if you missed any part of the show, and share it with your friends. We appreciate that. In the meantime, Dave Krieger, we'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.